Now let me speak to one of the most respected writers on the Troubles, who's available to have a conversation with us, Martin Dillon. Martin, good morning.
Good morning to you, Frank, as well. I'm sorry you're talking there about sort of dogs. I mean, I've always had cats, but anyway, there we go.
Yeah, you're a bit of a cat fan, because I actually worked with you many years ago, Martin, when you had the cushiest job in the world running a department in the BBC, and you gave that all up to become a hardcore writer.
Yeah, my mother, actually my late mother, used to say that she was really embarrassed when she met me in the centre of Belfast, because I was always carrying sort of plastic bags and not a briefcase. She said, I mean, how can an executive, BBC executive, be running around with plastic bags filled with tins of cat food? She said, I mean, it's just disgraceful. You know, so that's how it was. And yes, you're right. I mean, I remember you from my BBC days. I think really, the world of writing, I mean, I was sort of drawn to it when I was younger, and it took a long time, really, I think, to mature the whole sort of concept of, directing my writing skills to the Troubles.
Yeah, so then you went at it hammer and tongs, because, you know, you've written a number of books. Probably The Dirty War is one of them that's most recognised. You wrote about Michael Stone. You wrote about the Shankill Butchers. You've been writing about the IRA. You've been writing about the SAS. Is there anything you haven't written about?
Well, you know, the one thing is, I mean, I'm writing about very often people that, haven't been very happy about me. It's sort of putting them in the spotlight is one of those things about writing. When you're sort of directing your attention at conflict, you tend to make a lot of enemies in the process, which wasn't always the thing that I actually wanted to do, or to achieve. But it actually happened. I think in many respects, you're probably right. I mean, I really did go at it. I mean, books like The Dirty War took a long time and to really put together, and a lot of research. It was one of the books that I felt in many ways was one of my favorites, but I didn't really, I guess, fulfill my true objectives, because I should have followed it up with part two, because there were so many issues it raised that I never really got around to dealing with.
And did you find, when you were working on this latest one, which is Crossing the Line, that it was an opportunity to maybe add to what had already been done, or is this different?
I think it's sort of slightly different, because in many ways I'd always been writing about other people, and what I chose to do in this one was to write about myself. It's very difficult writing about yourself, because you've got to be sort of slightly confessional, and no one likes sort of trying to make a good confession. It's not an easy thing to do, because you also got to look at your personal life, with your relationship with your parents, with your own family. And I also looked at some of the issues, some of the people that I had confrontations with, including people like, the late sort of Prime Minister Edward Heath, who threw me out of his house in Salisbury, because he felt that I was in possession of classified information that really shone a light on some of his misdeeds inside the 10 Downing Street in the early 70s.
And how easy is it to get access, or how difficult is it to get access to some of the material that you would have been using to make these books must reads?
It's not easy. You have to meet some very dangerous people. I remember being put in the boot of a car and taken to a meeting. I remember having a gun sort of stuck in my face. You know, this kind of thing. And also, sometimes you know yourself. You're supplied with information. You have to really ask yourself, how good is it? How reliable is it? Am I being fed this by people who know that information is a weapon, and it's a weapon they want to use? In other words, they want me to print this because it suits their particular agenda. So very often I had to look at the sources and the reasons why certain people actually handed me information. Some of it turned out to be very true, but nowadays you've got these sort of expressions like fake news. Well, very often, I was fed fake information, and luckily enough, I mean, I recognized it in time and didn't put it into some of the books I wrote.
The Shankill Butchers, an entire book dedicated to them. Were they deserving of a book?
Oh, I think absolutely. You know, I think that was one of the most grisly crimes in Northern Ireland, by a bunch of very, very dangerous people led by an aggressive psychopath, Lenny Murphy, and one of his brothers, John Murphy. The Shankill Butchers, stand out as a gang that, slit people's throats and enjoyed doing it. I mean, certainly there are a lot of grisly crimes in the early 70s, people were tortured, people were burned with hot pokers. I remember seeing the body of a young mentally retarded boy whose body, you know, had been burned with hot pokers, a cross branded on his back and a number on his back, and his hands and feet burned. I mean, this kind of thing happened. Another elderly man who was sort of stabbed 142 times, but that's not what killed him. He died from slow strangulation because he was strung up by a rope, and the person who was using the knife was really just chiseling away at his body. They were torturing him. This kind of thing, you know, it had to be really exposed, and the Shangle Butchers was probably, the book was one of the best ways of sort of telling us this kind of thing is happening in our society. We better take note of it. I think people need to know, you know, and things like that are happening. People really need to know about them. I know that some will say, well, we really don't, but you can't hide this and it shouldn't be hidden.
You also touch, obviously, on agents and those who are obviously agents and those who might have been agents.
Frank, that's a very, very important topic. You know, I my own feeling is that in the years to come, this is one which is going to unravel slowly. I don't know how slowly, but certainly the use of terrorist agents by the state is a practice which raises a lot of very serious questions. I mean, moral questions. For instance, you know, when you employ a terrorist agent, how much sort of flexibility do you allow him to be a terrorist? In other words, to kill people because he, you know, it helps, it enables him to maintain a status within a terrorist organization so that he can be a good agent. He can give you information. I mean, some of the views that were expressed to me was about terrorist agents. Well, you know, they save more lives than they take. And that really was an equation which had, and also a decision that had to be made by counterterrorism officers and chiefs in Northern Ireland. I think there's a lot that's going to come out in years to come, particularly about people like Scabatici, who was the big informant within the IRA. I write about one in this book, and he was called Agent Ascot. That was his name to MI5. And he was a pedophile, but he was also an IRA commander in the Markets area. And one of the people who guarded him said, you know, he really deserved a medal because he saved so many lives. He was able to stop a lot of the IRA's bombings in the city center because the IRA teams who come in to bomb Belfast city center often hid out in the markets after the bombings. So he knew about the bombings in advance and tipped off his MI5 or special branch handlers. But he was also a very, very bad guy. And, you know, that the bad side had to be ignored because he was such a good agent.
And was a blind eye turned to him being a paedophile?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think also, by the way, I think people knew it. People in the IRA knew it. I mean, I outed this guy as a double agent in the Dirty War. And a lot of people threatened me after it because the IRA gave him a wonderful burial when he was assassinated. I don't know who actually killed him. The story at the time was that the loyalists killed him, but I don't know if that's entirely true. As I say in the book, there are several theories that he was maybe sacrificed because he was getting towards the end of his usefulness. Were the IRA encouraged to kill him? I don't think so. And I'm not so sure that the loyalists set out to kill him unless they were sort of provided with the information necessary to kill him. In other words, it was a prepared hit. And, you know, when I said, look, this guy was a double agent, I mean, the IRA didn't believe it. They didn't want to believe it. But they knew he was a bad guy, and his private life was, you know, was something that, you know, shouldn't have been tolerated. For instance, I mean, he was abusing young boys in the markets area of the city.
Shocking. It is shocking, and you can read about it in Crossing the Line, which is the latest book from you, Martin. You'll be in conversation with Hugh Jordan during the launch evening, 7 o'clock in Waterstones. Is that this evening?
Yes, it is indeed, yeah. I mean, Hugh's going to interview me because, I mean, Hugh is a very, very fine journalist. He works for Sunday World. He knows a lot of this area of life, and he's written a lot about the Troubles, and he knows me well, so he'll be able to ask the kind of questions that, I mean, you're asking now, Frank, and I think that's going to be valuable.
Be interesting to listen to. Also interesting to read the latest book, Crossing the Line by Martin Dillon. Thanks for coming on, Martin. Thank you.
Not at all. It was a pleasure, Frank. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.